Welcome. This is Tyler Yonk with the Data Driven Athlete Racing Team, bringing you the podcast Between Two Wheels. Just thought we'd do an introductory episode before we kick off our interviews and give you some exciting cycling coverage in the world of fitness and all things pertaining to two wheels. The big goal is to have some interviews with some really interesting people, talk cycling, kind of give a humorous aspect of cycling and our breakdown of that. I will be joined in later podcasts by my co-host Kurt Mills. But basically, one of the biggest aspects we wanted to bring to this is just cycling in Northern California. We will touch on Tour de France, all different aspects. So we'll keep that in mind. What I wanted to do today was just kind of give an idea of how I watch the tour, my insights for the tour as far as what I glean out of them, and how for you to best see the tour and enjoy the tour and to get all the analysis out there. I personally am not going to give you much of that myself as far as the analysis. I have a lot to give, but we'll wait till we can bounce that off of another person besides just doing it solo. So I'm just give you a little background on myself. I'm mid-40s. I do masters racing in Northern California. I've been racing since I was about 15, 16 years old. I took a 10-year stint off in my 30s, and Cat 1 raced on the Oyelmi professional cycling team in the 90s in Colorado and Boulder, specifically raced for University of Colorado. I just had a fun time doing racing in that era, in that time frame, and just trying to pass it on to others now with data-driven athlete. With that said, I got involved in cycling at a young age, loved watching it on TV. First saw, I think, the movie Breaking Away is what kind of got me into it. And then watched the Tour de France, Greg LeMond in 1986 was one I really first followed. And then was able to go back and see some videos from earlier eras to get some perspective. Dove into it in a historical perspective for my own self. I just love all that. You know, reading the Romantic era, the Winning magazine, the Velo News newsprint at the time, read books on it. Just really enjoyed that portion of cycling. But much like my father was for, you know, I've always say my dad's big into the three main sports of football, basketball, and baseball. And I've always said he's a scout for the 49ers. They just don't know it. In other words, he researches and knows everything about these players as if he was a scout. Which is just something, you know, I think young kids end up doing that with baseball, knowing the statistics. It's just a fascinating way to be involved. Anyway, so back in the day when I would be able to see the tour, I would get the videos, I would watch those. And CBS had coverage, a package, like a 1.5 hour or so package every Sunday of the tour. So, you know, tour would start and they may show the prologue. And then the next week, you know, it'll be a recap of the first day stages. It's all this romantic background, John Tesh music going along with it, with Phil Liggett doing all the commentary. It's fluff pieces, so to speak. And, you know, nothing, it wasn't live coverage that we have today. Well, that gets us to today. So how do we watch it today? Now, back then, I also had to, you know, when the tour was over, then you would wait for weeks at a time and finally get your Velo News in the mail to read about it, and a stage-by-stage breakdown. You would get, back then I had Winning magazine, which is this glossy, nice print magazine, English, for recap. Once again, recaps, all these pictures. It was awesome stuff, but it wasn't real time. I didn't even know that Andy Hampston, for example, had won the Giro d'Italia, the Tour of Italy, until, you know, they mentioned it in the Tour de France that year. So I think it was, 1988. So I didn't even know about those things. It just didn't come across. Later years, I think in the early 90s, they had a thing where you can actually dial in a phone number, and it was a, you know, the 800 or 900 number. It wasn't toll free, that's for sure. It cost money, and my dad would allow me to do this on a Sunday after a big stage, and they would give a breakdown of who was winning the stages. I remember Alvaro Mejia. I think that was 93 or so, where he was up there riding for Motorola, and, you know, I'd call in and you'd get these updates as to the stage winning, and then that was your breaking news. That was pre-internet, but that was really slow dialing. Anyway, We don't have that now. That's just the glory days. So what do we do now? Well, now I have podcasts. I have TV. I don't personally have internet. I mean, internet. I do have internet. I don't personally have cable TV and or DirecTV cord cutters, but I have gone ahead and subscribed to the NBC Gold Platinum feed, not Platinum, but just their Gold feed, which gives me an app on my iPhone. I've also got Roku on multiple TVs in the house, so I'm able to have, with that app and that $40 subscription. By the way, that $40 subscription also gave me stages of the Vuelta. It gave me multiple races early in the year all throughout the year. So it was well worth the $40 fee. But anyway, I'm able to watch live tape 0 kilometer to the end of each stage of the tour. There's, you know, I can watch those on my live, or I can do a replay when they load that back up. So it's very convenient for me to do. That also gives me the option of seeing two different feeds. It gives a Paul Sherwin and Phil Liggett commentary, which I think the NBC feed, if you have cable, DirecTV, that pipes that in. It's the same feed that they have, but it has that with commercials. Or the alternate one is Matt Keenan and Robbie McEwen, both Australians. Robbie McEwen, former pro, as is Paul Sherwin as well, but Paul, I think, retired in like 86. Robbie McEwen, was in the 2000s, probably 2007, 8, 9, somewhere in that range, I want to say. So he's recent pro. And personally, I enjoy the Matt Keenan, Robbie McEwen. It's just seems a little more updated. Nothing against Paul and Phil, but they do seem to be just kind of waning for me as far as the ability to commentate. However, if you don't have that, you can subscribe other ways, or you can do the you go to steephill.tv or cyclingfans.com. Both of those will give you an option for pirated feeds. I do find that the Tour de France pirated feeds seem to be more difficult to get than other races throughout the year. But you know, your pirated feed from Europe, you're getting pop-ups. It's like some bad porn site. That's not the pop-ups, but it's just crap for your computer. So I prefer not to do that if I don't have to. But you know, during the year, that's one way I definitely get my fix in. Steve Hill, one thing I do like about that website, you click on it and you click the Tour de France on the top, and it pulls the page up, and it'll have that day's results, but it'll have a non-spoiler. It won't actually give the results. It'll give all these links to, you can see the last kilometer of the race or certain aspects of the race. It has a link to it, and you can just pop and click on it and see that on a separate web browser. And it doesn't give, it doesn't spoil who actually won the race, where if you go to Cycling News or Velo News, it's, you know, see Kittle posting up, and you know, who won that day, and it's a no-brainer. So it takes all the drama out for you if you happen to not see it live. Then what I do after I watch all the races, I love my podcasts, and that's kind of the reason I'm doing this myself. I'll just get a list here of some of the great cycling podcasts that you can do. My favorite one, and this is throughout the year, it's some of the best insight. It's the Cycling Podcast. It's with Richard Moore, Lionel Burney, Daniel Fribos, and they have Francois Tomazo sitting in for Daniel as Daniel's doing interview stuff with ITV, I believe, over in Europe. Maybe Eurosport too. I'm not sure if they're even covering that. So the Cycling Podcast, I think it's presented by Telegraph or magazine or a newspaper over there. Another one that's good just for the tour is ITV, just I, T, and V. It's Matt Rendell, Ned Bolting, Chris Boardman, and David Miller, announcers for ITV over there. And when I say over there, I'm over in currently in France, obviously, for the tour. SBS is another one, SBS Cycling Central Podcast. They do have a good podcast throughout the year. They have this one for the Tour de France. It's about a 30-minute daily. It's usually one of the first ones to come out. It's pretty good. All of these ones that are the cycling podcast, ITV, SBS, they all have decent interviews with the people in and around the race, or cyclists, the racers after the stage, post stage, pre stage. The cycling podcast has also a little, I'm gonna say about 30 to 40 minute specials that they release every day. It's called Kilometer Zero, and it's just something special. They had one the other day that was on Phil Anderson, first non-European to wear the yellow jersey in the Tour de France. I think it was the 82 Tour, He's from Australia and ended up riding later in his life with Motorola. It was really good to hear that and kind of go down memory lane. Cycling News has a cycling podcast. They're not daily. They're maybe weekly so far on the tour. Velo News with Kaylee Fretz and Andy Hood. Andy Hood's their European correspondent. Kaylee's their senior editor. It's fairly decent as well. Sometimes they'll pop in with a little extra. It's every few days with an extra podcast. They had a good one the other day with when Sagan got booted out of the tour. And then we have the newest one on the horizon here. It kind of just came about, which is Lance Armstrong and his friend JB, who's some former DJ in Austin, Texas, doing one called Stages Podcast, where they do a daily recap, about a 40-minute podcast. They do a breakdown of that day's race and a little preview for the day ahead. I know I'm supposed to not like this podcast at all, but I've actually really enjoyed it. And I think the reason and trust me, I'm no cycling Lance Armstrong fanboy. You know, it is interesting because they also do Facebook Live on it. So you get to watch them present, do the podcast itself. And, you know, the commentary on there, you still have these same people who, you know, God love them. Maybe they went through something with cancer in their life. So Lance is still some sort of God to them or something. I don't know what it is, but they, you know, love you, Lance, biggest fan. Well, that's not me. That's not me at all. But what I do love is cycling. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it's my growing up with this love of cycling. And, you know, I went through that whole thing with Lance Armstrong. I mean, I raced against him in the 90s. And, you know, a lot of teammates, I don't know who was doing what. You know, I never got involved in the drug aspect that everyone else did. But, you know, I raced a pretty good level in the U.S. at the time. And, I mean, racing was fast. And you don't know how many of those guys, you know, testing was minimal. And I don't know how many of those guys were doing what. And that's it's an era that affected me directly. But, you know, and I'm sorry about that. You know, I know Phil Guymon wrote an article. Phil Guymon just recently retired from Cannondale Drapac and wrote an article about Lance. Kind of ripping him, you know, the whole drug aspect and, you know, the people he hurt. And so therefore, I guess the summary is, therefore, this podcast should not be listened to. I don't know. You see on tour where all these cyclists, you know, who had been in that era, their directors, they're working broadcasting. You know, personally, I want to hear good race analysis. And actually, that's what I'm getting from Lance Armstrong, as you would expect. Keep this comment in context, but it's actually been somewhat humble in his take on everybody. He's not been a big hater of the, you know, the Froome, the Ports, as you kind of, I almost expected him to be, of like, oh, well, back in my day, I did this. You know, I haven't heard any of that. It's just been, you know, hey, he's made comments about not knowing, I don't know enough about this aspect as far as the sprinters go. And, you know, you'd think it would be a know-it-all. So look, take it for what it's worth. If you're interested in cycling in kind of a introductory level, it's actually really good in that aspect because his friend, the one that does it with his co-host JB, brings a lot of naivete to cycling, I would say, but asks those questions that, you know, those that are just in just getting to know bike racing itself, which is kind of, you know, our whole aspect is I want to grow the sport, and you get so much of this of, you know, you see this in racing itself where, oh, that guy's a cat five, which is a low end of cycling and, you know, racing, and therefore shunning him. And, you know, and that's not necessary. And it's not even necessary to do that with fans, you know, bring him in. You know, Lance, for all his faults, did raise the cycling awareness in the States and, you know, brought a lot of money into the industry. Whether that level stayed as high as it was when he was winning and supposedly clean, no, it's obviously dropped. But that doesn't mean that it dropped to the levels it was before then. Like I said, we have full 0 kilometer to the end coverage of the Tour de France now. I get all these podcasts. You know, a lot of that's technology, but it's also an interest. You know, NBC would not be running that if there wasn't an interest for it and they weren't actually making money on it. So, you know, a lot of that has to do with him. Look, with that all said, my interest is getting a high-level analysis from the Tour. And come on, guy that won even dirty but has been involved in that many Tour de France's himself and that much racing has some insight. whether it's strategic or not. You know, look, I think there would be a place, I don't know, why is Chris Horner, for example, not getting hooked up into a podcast? You know, people talk about him and his dirty past. Let's not even go there, because my point is Chris Horner is one that is known for his tactical sense and his understanding of racing. He won the Vuelta 2012, I believe. So he's obviously, he's been over there. He's done it. And that kind of interest and that kind of knowledge is what I want to know. I want to hear. I want to see that on a daily basis. And it's exciting. It makes me enjoy the tour more. So that's what I want. I don't know why there's not more of this. You know, it needs to have more grand tour, high level aspects of commentary from an English speaking perspective. I don't have Bradley Wiggins talking anywhere that I know of. I don't have Cadel Evans talking anywhere that I know of. Stephen Roach anywhere that I know of. Andy Hampston anywhere that I know of. So, you know what? Here we have it. And, you know, it's been interesting. But, you know, keep an open mind. It doesn't mean you have to agree with everything he says. With that in mind, it does bring me then to, you know, the Tour de France and the analysis of my own from stage 1 through 8 has been just finished. Early on, Peter Sagan had a crash with Mark Cavendish, and Cavendish crashed out. Sagan was ejected. I personally think it was the wrong call. You take a good forensic look at the video, it does not appear that that should have been expulsion, should have been the proper verdict of the jury. And once again, you know, that could be here nor there. You know, people argue about that, and I think it's a shame. When you look at DeMar's exact movements in that race as Cavendish was hitting and Sagan was falling into Cavendish, DeMar is cutting like multiple bike lengths across Bahani. Oh, he almost went down. He rubbed his front wheel, had to pull basically back and stopped his sprint. And, you know, that's relegation worthy. But that wasn't being talked about or even discussed by the jury that I know of. So you have that, and then you go online and there's people, you know, it reminded me of the Lance Armstrong thing where the fans are the fans and they can do no wrong. You know, I saw this with Cavendish. Oh, Cavendish, you know, he's the greatest, and therefore, since he went down, there's no way that you know, he would have gone down but for Sagan. You know what? I can look back at videos when, I'm trying to remember, it was like a Tour of Swiss or Romandy several years ago when Cav rode, for High Road, or Columbia High Road, and he cut someone and, you know, torqued his wheel. I should have this picture of his carbon rim in a 90-degree angle, and I don't think it actually, you know, broke. Well, it probably cracked, but it's amazing flexibility of the rim. But the point is, that race, he could be dangerous too. It's cycling, it's sprinting, it's the way it is. But to have some perspective, you know, don't just go blindly into thinking your guy is the only one that can do right, and anyone that knocks him down is wrong. Same goes for, you know, Lance that we talked about here previously. Anyway, so we've got stage 9 coming up tomorrow. Big Mountain, supposed to be the queen stage of the tour. And it'll be interesting to see what happened. My reading so far is you've got Froome in first place. You've got Port, you know, hanging around, and Richie Port of Team BMC. And my only concern, and I think Port's looking good, but my only concern for him is his team so far. And they've done some, the first climb on stage 5 was a little suspect of having BMC, his team, on the front all day for what? Didn't work out for, you know, he didn't gain anything over that. And then today they were, had two guys off in the break, like hammering, not just, sometimes you get a rider up in the break so he can float back for the team leader when the team leader attacks and comes out of the field. But that wasn't going to happen today. So it was odd to see. As far as the Americans go on the tour, you've got 3, Nate Brown, Taylor Finney, and Andrew Tilansky. Andrew has possible chance of getting in the top, well, he's already in the top 20, but remaining there, maybe a top 10 if he rides like he did in the Vuelta last year. Taylor Finney had the first polka dot jersey at stage 1. Nate Brown got it on stage 2 and 3, I believe. With that, Taylor's kind of had a media fanfare and some interesting blog. He reminds me of Spicoli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I'm not saying he's drugged out, but damn, he sure talks like he is at times. So anyway, it's been great. So part of this podcast, the interest in it for me is to delve a little deeper into the Northern California cycling scene, get some interest from what's going on up here, kind of on the on a level of, you know, the up and coming, some of the masters cycling, some of the females, and, you know, just kind of seeing what we can get and some interest. And it should be interesting. We have some cool interviews lined up. I think it'll be pretty exciting. I'm not going to spoil the cake on who that is, but keep in mind for what we have there. Tune back into it for that. I hope next podcast we'll have a bigger group of people than just me going solo. It's not fun for anybody. And it should be Kurt Mills, and we're looking for Nate Dunn as well, the leader of the data-driven athlete coaching and data-driven athlete racing team. So thanks for tuning in. Enjoy your cycling out there. Stay cool. And thanks. Thanks for tuning in. One go.